This message comes from NPR sponsor Sony Pictures Classics, presenting Wicked Little Letters, a new comedy starring Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley based on an outrageously true scandal. Wicked Little Letters is now playing only in theaters.
We've all seen reboots on television, new takes on everything from Full House to Saved by the Bell to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. The new Hulu show Reboot is the fictional behind-the-scenes story of one of those efforts.
Featuring a cast full of ringers like Rachel Bloom, Keegan-Michael Key, Paul Reiser, and Judy Greer, Reboot follows the attempt to create a gritty update of a TGIF-style family sitcom. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about Reboot on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Joining us today is, oh, what do you know? It's Pop Culture Happy Hour producer Candace Lim. Welcome back, Candace.
Hello, guys.
Hey.
Candace is so often with us, but just maybe not on this side of the mic. I'm so excited. So in Reboot, Rachel Bloom plays Hannah, the writer of a well-regarded edgy festival movie whose new idea is to offer a streaming service a darker new take on Step Right Up, a fictional sitcom from the early aughts that looks in clips just like a lot of real family sitcoms. The cast that reunites for this effort includes Judy Greer as Bree, who once played the mom, Keegan-Michael Key as Reed, who played her husband, Johnny Knoxville as Clay, who played her ex, and Callum Worthy as Zach, the adult man who hasn't outgrown his past life as a child actor, playing Bree and Clay's kid. Paul Reiser plays Gordon, the show's old showrunner, who weasels his way into Hannah's project and tries to take over. And Krista Marie Yu plays the streamer's head of comedy. An additional level of meta commentary, hold on to your hats, is that just like the real show Reboot, the fictional reboot of Step Right Up is being done for Hulu. So the fictional executives are, for example, very proud of actual Hulu shows like The Handmaid's Tale. Reboot comes from Stephen Levitan, who knows his way around family sitcoms because he was one of the creators of Modern Family. So we want to jump right into this. Candace, how did you feel about Reboot?
I was charmed by Reboot. I think there's a lot that pulled me in. First things first, I'm a Keegan-Michael Key completist. I think he's kind of like the Phil Dunphy of the show, very like bumbling, clueless, lacks like a little bit of self-awareness, but I think he carries a lot of heart here. I've never seen a Johnny Knoxville entity, which is my way of saying I've never seen Jackass, but seeing him act here, I was actually very impressed. I think this was a good match of like actor, character, showcase. But above all else, I was very pulled in because I have been very curious about what Steve Levitan would bring to the table after Modern Family. I loved that show. I also don't think Modern Family would get made today for a variety of reasons. One of them just being, you know, broadcast networks are not greenlighting 22 episode first seasons off a pilot.
Right.
And I think for Steve to go to Hulu and make a show knowing it's going to air on a streaming site, knowing it's not going to be appointment television, knowing you're never going to hit 100 episodes syndication, that was very interesting to me. And I think this show is asking, like, what is it like to enter a new industry and a new environment that is frankly not banking on you anymore? So I think with all of this being said and all this commentary about the world of sitcoms and reboots, I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Very good setups and punchlines. And I think this show is very broad in its appeal. I think if you're anyone between like a Modern Family and Curb Your Enthusiasm, you'll kind of find your place in the show.
Yeah, that's I like that description. Glenn, what did you think?
Oh, man, Linda, I am a simple man with simple needs. And look, creators out there, if you want to get me on your side, here's the answer key. Here's the game facts walkthrough. It's very simple. Hire Judy Greer. She's going to go all out for you. She's going to commit to the bit. And she's going to do it in a way that is so, there's such a knowing intelligence in everything she does. Not to say she's winking at the audience or holding any part of herself back. That's not what she does. But there's this weird we're all in this together vibe that she just gives off. And I love seeing Keegan-Michael Key as a pompous actor. I'm in the can for pompous actor jokes. I love seeing Rachel Bloom on my television doing literally anything. You know, she's called upon to flail a lot here. Nobody flails better. You know what? I'm not as taken with the Johnny Knoxville, Callum Worthy stuff on this show, but I'm okay with that because you know who that storyline gets me on my screen is Carrie Kenny. I guess she goes by Carrie Kenny Silver nowadays. She plays the character of Callum Worthy's real-life mom. I am not even mad that the pilot promised me Eliza Coop as Keegan-Michael Key's girlfriend and then turns her into a very occasional guest star. I'll deal with a Coop dearth if I get a Greer bounty, and I got a Greer bounty here. But I was surprised by this, but man, I just feel that Paul Reiser slips into this guy so naturally. He is so effortless, never lunging for a joke, always just tossing it away. And I think either he gets better as an actor or the character becomes more lovable as the season progresses, but I am all in on the show.
Yeah, I was really interested when you first told me that you liked this show because I don't necessarily think of you as liking, you know, a somewhat broad mix of jokes and sentimentality and, you know, some pretty genuine I love you kind of dynamics between some of these characters. But then I remembered that you are a big joke density guy. And one of the things I think is interesting about this show is that not only does this show have a high joke density, but there is in particular an episode that revolves around the writer's room. There is a moment when Paul Reiser, playing this showrunner, is kind of battling Rachel Bloom, his co-showrunner.
I was under the impression we're still making a comedy.
Oh my God, just because they're not pitching like old-timey jokes, does it?
No, they're not pitching jokes, period.
So comedy's evolved since you last wrote for television? I mean, honestly, whole species have evolved.
Listen, we don't schlep in a live audience every week so they can sit there and nod in thoughtful amusement.
And the thing is, like, in some ways, he is set up as old-fashioned, yep. Right? He is set up initially as maybe he's a jerk and she's right and he's wrong. There are a lot of people who feel that way about contemporary comedy, that it needs more jokes. And I think they do a pretty good job of having some fun at the expense of his kind of writers, some fun at the expense of her kind of writers. And I was interested in how much it kind of engaged that idea of jokey comedies with actual laughs versus kind of subtler character comedy kind of stuff. And I liked the fact that I felt like it didn't come down too hard on one side or the other, that it suggested that perhaps both of those things belong in comedy. And at the same time, the show itself has, I think, a lot of really good kind of throwaway jokes, especially about television itself. The moment when the Hulu head of comedy says to one of the actors, "You're extremely popular with sassy seniors and coupon fanatics." It's not surprising, but there's a knowing, wry way of talking about television and comedy that really resonated for me. Stuff like the idea that there's a show called Chicago Hope, Miami.
Solid piece of business.
That's a solid little joke. So I did feel like ultimately there was enough good stuff here about comedy and television that I really liked it. I will say, when they wander into some of the stuff about the people's personal lives and everybody's love life and all that, I was a little less invested in that. I didn't necessarily think all of that was as effective. And I did find it delightful. I did find it delightful much of the time.
I think it's fair to say Steve Levitan is kind of like a proxy for Paul Reiser in this.
Sure.
He's coming at this from a bit of a meta chess player a little bit. And I think what I respect about Steve Levitan is just that he very easily could have gone to ABC and been like, I want to pull a Young Sheldon. I want to make a Manny Delgado spinoff, call it Manny in Manhattan. But instead, he kind of chose to interrogate comedy and his peers and creators in the industry. And I think more importantly, he really asked himself, like, what am I doing here? Do I have any currency in this game? And I think by choosing to critique himself, he became the fourth wall that like Modern Family had a bit.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to watch him kind of let himself be a chess piece in a very like Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm way.
Yeah. I mean, the show does set up this very binary conflict, old school multicam cheesy versus contemporary single cam self-aware. And you do get some of that. I'm not going to say you don't. You get like the old school writer asking for a fax machine. You get the young writers talking about the Bechdel test. These are jokes that come at you fast, but they're also about the industry in ways that land.
Okay, remember I told you they were rebooting my old show?
Mm-hmm.
I read the script.
And?
And I am shocked, but it's really good. It's smart dialogue and nuanced relationships. Oh, and get this, my character had a dark secret the entire time.
And it's still a comedy?
Here's what's brilliant. It is both the funniest thing you've ever read, and you won't laugh once.
That's saying something about the state of sitcoms today. That's smart, and that rises above, like, millennials and their avocado toast jokes. And the show does become about the American sitcom, about its rhythms, which are also its restrictions. I think I would enjoy the version that Hannah pitched, and I know for a fact I would not enjoy the show that Hannah and Gordon are producing together, but that doesn't matter because this is a workplace comedy and it's the workplace behind the scenes of the workplace that matters.
One of the things that surprised me about it is that Hulu does allow a certain number of jokes in this that are sort of at the expense of Hulu and streaming services, not only because it pokes a bit of fun at the repetitive nature of reboots, but also because it goes into things like, you know, that they're interested in this reboot partly because the old episodes of the sitcom play very well on their service.
Sir, it does surprisingly well on our platform with family, pop culture, vicarious living, and live to laugh audience segments. Average viewing time, 63 minutes.
Are we sure that's not just people leaving it on for their dogs?
No, we track that.
You know, there is some fun to be had. Now, look, most of the Hulu executives ultimately have a reasonably generous character development, right? It doesn't make them look like monsters, at least in the episodes that I have seen of this. I did like the fact that they allowed there to be a little bit of a knowing, like if you follow this industry stuff, not too much of it, but, you know, as kind of gentle teasing of the idea of their own service or network.
And as Ramel, our producer, pointed out, the show is called Reboot. It's not a reboot. If you're casting the same people, it's a revival. But speaking of casting, Michael McKean was originally cast as Gordon, who, as we mentioned, is played by Paul Reiser here. And I have to say, Bloom and Reiser just have this great chemistry. I mean, I love McKean, but, like, I think it's important as the series goes on. I mean, the fact that Gordon is Jewish is just such an important part of who he is and what he brings to the table. And I want to play a little clip of what I mean.
As Mina, funniest food.
I don't know. Oatmeal.
Oatmeal? Aren't you embarrassed? It's pickles.
That is literally a Neil Simon joke from the Sunshine Boys. It evokes vaudeville. It evokes Borscht Belt. And, you know, if Michael McKean tried to sell me that joke, I mean, I think I might call the Anti-Defamation League. You know, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think Gordon and Hannah, you're kind of bringing up like how strong that character is because of who's cast in them. I think a lot of their binary kind of hinges on this idea that nostalgia is a trap.
Mm-hmm.
I think when reboots started coming out, there was a lot of skepticism, a lot of people being like, why are you rebooting my favorite show? Because I don't think the show could have been made 5 years ago.
Right.
But now that we have a lot more data, we have a lot more commentary on it. I think sitcoms are kind of just this anchor of American comfort, but not for everyone.
Oh, for sure.
And I think the show definitely responds to that idea by saying, like, look, there were always two sides to every story. I think a really good example of this is in episode 2, where Gordon and Hannah, the cast, are in this room, and they're kind of talking about how Gordon wrote a character based on himself, and Hannah's like, well, this was also my life and it wasn't funny. And I'm like, oh, that's real. But it's just interesting because I think at the end of the day, what a reboot is, what a sitcom is, it's to me kind of like an escape room where you like know all the clues and you play it over and over again, but you just decide never to leave. And so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. They touch on a lot of different stuff, but they don't hammer away on anything for too long. Not too much of the show is about any one thing, I didn't think.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's a moment where they seem like they're going down the road of kind of making jokes about the paranoia around claims of sexual misconduct and things like that. And that there is a kind of an overzealous, you know, HR idea. And I was not in the mood for a lot of comedy around that, but they moved off of it pretty quickly, which I was relieved about. I do think they're cheating the time a little bit in order to make it make sense that Keegan-Michael Key could have been the stepdad in a in a show like this, because he's a little too young for that. The people who were dads in a show like that are people like Patrick Duffy, who's considerably older than Keegan-Michael Key.
Right.
So, you know, I do think they're cheating the timeline a little bit, because my reference for the aughts would be a slightly different era than the very specific opening credit sequences that the old clips of Step Right Up had. It's definitely a cheat on the era a little, I think.
Yeah, the timing's a little off because, you know, when Modern Family came out, broadcast networks were doing a lot of divesting from family sitcoms and going really into workplace. Yeah. So this is The Office, Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
We're a little misplaced, but okay.
Yeah, that had me worried at the beginning because I thought, oh, this is going to be really broad and really kind of saying, look at these old cheesy sitcoms. I do want to say one thing about the actor Lawrence Pressman. Look this guy up. He plays Jerry, the director. He's been around forever. He's such a familiar face. He was like the lead of the hospital on Doogie Howser, M.D., which is why his presence here is just a meta commentary on the sitcom because it's just so great to see him. And towards the end of the season, he gets some stuff to chew on in a way that I have never seen him able to actually do in a sitcom environment. Yeah. So look this guy up, Larry Pressman. He's fantastic.
He's a real, hey, it's that Lawrence Pressman kind of guy. Hey, it's that sitcom dad or boss.
Mm-hmm.
And which I think is interesting because so much of the rest of this cast is very specifically from elements of quote-unquote new television or like new television comedy. If you think about Keegan-Michael Key, who really came to prominence a lot in Key and Peele, if you think about Rachel Bloom, who did My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, if you think about Judy Greer, who a lot of people first saw in Arrested Development, you are really seeing people who very specifically are part of this revolution in TV comedy and are associated with it. And then Paul Reiser, of course, goes back to must-see TV. I mean, there is some meta around just the casting of this show and the way that they've chosen to go about it. I liked this more than I thought I was going to. I wasn't sure that this was going to be for me, but ultimately I did enjoy it.
Agreed.
Well, we want to know what you think about Reboot. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Glenn Weldon, Candace Lim, thank you both for being here. This was so much fun.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Ramel Wood and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides our theme music. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about Do Revenge.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
It's a high-stakes election year, so it's not enough to just follow along. You need to understand what's happening so you are fully informed come November. Every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast, our political reporters break down important stories and backstories from the campaign trail so you understand why it matters to you. Listen to the NPR Politics Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.